Hey everybody, and welcome to another 9x90 episode. We are going to be speaking with Chris today about a very, very interesting topic that we have not covered on the show yet, but I think is highly relevant to a lot of you out there. With your own company, looking at potentially acquiring or being acquired one day. So I want to thank Chris for coming on and taking time to cover this very interesting topic with us. Tell us about what he's doing in the M&A space and how you can reach out to him later. But first things first, I think we want to hear his origin story, how he got started, why he's totally awesome in this space, and why you should definitely be working with him. So, Chris, the floor is yours.
Hey guys, I'm Chris Allman, the founder of Equip Financial Partners, where really, my goal has been to work with owners on an exit strategy and understanding their personal finances so that when they are ready to exit their business, whether that's right away or at some point later on in the future, that they have everything organized and ready to go.
Awesome. Okay, so how old is Equip Financial Partners?
Yeah, so I am just over the 1 year mark from last year. It's an interesting journey, and I look forward to kind of going into that a little bit more with you, but yeah, just crossing over that 1 year mark. So, happy to have made it this far.
Yeah, definitely. What did you do before starting Equip Partners that led you here?
Yeah. So I've been in the wealth management, the financial planning space for a little over a decade and have gone down that path so long that I just kind of really understood how, the wealth management side works, how investments work and things like that. But one of the things that I learned really, I guess it was probably 3-4 years ago, I came across a business owner that was looking for advice, right? They wanted to understand how to really get the wealth that they've built in their business out.
Okay.
But what I was finding is that they were saying that every time that there was, someone that they would reach out to for financial planning or whatever it might be, they always felt like they were being sold something. Like are you selling your business? I'd be happy to kind of take that from you and manage the assets when you get done. That's kind of the story that I was hearing over and over. But before financial planning, before I got into that, I actually flipped houses. So I worked with investors kind of on that, got some experience there. So I really understand the real estate aspect of investing, which is another thing that a lot of owners have. They have real estate, and being able to understand how that works into everything also just kind of made that transition very natural to go from the wealth management, financial planning, into more of the exit strategy and how to extract that wealth out.
Interesting. So with the real estate aspect, do you pull like a McDonald's where you have them separate the real estate and the business and they like lease the office space back to that business, like whoever acquires it? Like, do you do that game or not really?
Sometimes it makes a lot of sense. It really just kind of depends on the owner's structure of their business and what they need from a cash and a tax flow perspective.
Yeah.
Right. So sometimes the business or the land that the business is on might be one of the most valuable parts of it just because of the location or whatever it may be, or, the facility that they've built, that might be part of the sale. So, in some ways you want it included in the business, but at the same time, it also makes sense from a tax perspective occasionally to keep it outside of the business and then give you the opportunity to lease it back if you do sell the business aspect.
Yeah. But that's where they come in and talk to you and ask.
Be able to figure that stuff out.
Play a little Monopoly here. So let's see. What questions did you ask yourself when you were looking at starting Equip Partners? I know you kind of answered this, but is there anything else that you want to add to that list of questions and criteria you gave yourself before you broke off?
Yeah. So, being a person that deals with finances all the time, it's really easy to kind of get caught up in money, right? And kind of the pursuit of money and what do you, what do you want to do this new business for? Right. Because I had a great job before, made great money, didn't really have anything that was forcing me to make a decision to leave, other than the fact that, you know, I've known for a long time. I have that entrepreneurial spirit, want to, you know, be able to take the reins and have an opportunity to fail. And so one of the questions that I ask myself is, you know, how willing am I to fail? And, you know, I have to be realistic with myself and realize like that's a very real possibility. Had to think about, you know, am I doing this for financial reasons? Am I just motivated by money? And really at the end of the day, I found out by just kind of like soul searching, if you will, that I was staying where I was because of the money. Right. So for me, that pursuit of, you know, having an opportunity to fail and just lead things and grow something meaningful, being able to understand like what my motivations were, that's probably one of the biggest things that I had to, you know, go through.
Yeah. And then you have family as well.
I do. I have a wife and two daughters, so they're both pretty young. So, you know, I have to kind of make sure I can support them and that decision. So that was a little bit of a challenge for my wife, but she's come aboard and been very supportive through it.
Yeah. With I was literally, I think, traveling 75% of the time. My husband was like, "You have to start something on your own. We have a 2-year-old who needs to know what you look like." I was like starting to be cut out of her little family pictures she was drawing, or she would say like, "Well, mommy's not in the picture because she's at work in this country or that country." And that's when we realized, okay, it's time for me to start something that.
Yeah, that is definitely a challenge, you know, for me. Yeah. I'm one that I can get lost in what I'm doing and just stay there. So I've, you know, really tried to set those boundaries. And I think there's a misperception that you have to, you know, just grind and grind and grind and work 24 hours a day. And I don't think it's healthy. I think, you know, you need to be able to set time aside for yourself, whether that's for like working out, you know, just whatever it is that kind of like gives you that energy and revives you every day. Like that's really important. So that's been crucial.
Absolutely. Cause you need to give your all at work and you also need to give your all at home. And then you need to like find that way to like decompress between everything else.
Yeah. But, and there's not really, you know, the work-life balance thing. It's more so of just going back and forth. Right. And when you're on kind of like riding the bike, when, you know, you have one foot on one side and one foot on the other, and you just try to keep going so that you stay in balance. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. We, the deal we have is Mondays. I have no guilt. As long as I want to stay in the office, I could do like a 16-hour day, but every other day it's, I have to unplug and like, there's no devices from like 5 PM until 8 PM when they're awake, like until bedtime. Just, but yeah. I mean, if your girls are older, probably it's a little bit longer window because they stay up later.
I try to get them in bed as early as I can.
We do the same. And my husband was like, when I moved their bedtime to 7, he was like, "Why?" I was like, "We need time to recharge."
That's exactly it.
But yeah. All right. So let's see. What made you decide to focus specifically on business exit strategies? Because you worked in wealth management, you worked with all these different ways to create wealth for your clients. What made you decide to focus on this?
So right now, there's one of the biggest opportunities out there for helping people kind of in that business owner space, right? Regardless of the size of the business. And, you know, you just look at the baby boomer generation. Many of them started their own businesses, not because they wanted to start a business, just because they love what they do, right? That's what most people start a business for. And they're all kind of getting to that point where they're starting to retire. It started a couple of years back, and then now they're kind of to that point where the last kind of generation of the baby boomers is, you know, in the next 5-7 years, most of them will be retiring. And one of the things that I learned just a few years back was that it's roughly 50% of owners exit their business unexpectedly, whether, you know, it's health issues, they pass away, divorces, disagreements, whatever it may be. You know, about half of the time, that's what happens. And then when you look at it from a broader perspective, even from a small business up to like the lower middle market, only about 20% of businesses will sell. And then kind of on top of that, you have the fact that almost 78% of owners are counting on their business and the wealth that they've built in it to be able to retire, like to be able to have a life after. And even if it's not retirement, like if they're counting on the business to be able to provide for their next business venture or whatever it may be. And so there's a big issue there. If only 20% of businesses actually sell and 78% of them are counting on the money from the sale, like where does that leave most of them, right? Yeah. So it's terrible. I mean, my granddad was a small business owner, ran a construction company all across the Southeast, built metal frame buildings like hospitals and, you know, Fred's, Dollar Generals, things like that.
Yeah.
And super smart guy. He still is. I mean, he's sharp as a tack at 85. Yeah. And the problem that he ran into is that he never built up people around him. You know, all the business was essentially done through him. He was that key, you know, the linchpin. And he ended up having some health issues and couldn't get out. Like he just couldn't get around and shake the hands. So at the end of the day, he didn't have anything to show for.
Yeah.
You know, and that's too common. So that's kind of why I wanted to focus on that. Just really try to make a difference and change those outcomes so that we can see, you know, more owners having success.
Yeah. No, I that totally makes sense. You looked at the numbers and you said, look, there's a huge opportunity here. People are losing and I could create a win-win situation.
Right.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. I'm on your level now.
Yeah. So one of the things though about, you know, thinking about exit strategies though, one of the biggest misconceptions I have that I face all the time is that, you know, exit planning or exit strategy, it's something that you do, you know, a couple of years before you're ready to exit. Okay. It's really not. It's just having good business strategy and focusing on building transferable value. So you can start doing that on day one, right? Like you start focusing on what makes your business actually valuable, what makes it unique, right? And then lean into those things, and then the cash flow and all that other stuff follows. But it also makes sure that you have contingency plans. You know, you've got the right insurance for key employees and things like that. You have those safety nets in place, which also makes you more valuable if someone's looking to acquire you, because they're like, everything's tied up. Like it's, you know, ready to go.
It's de-risked. It's franchisable. It's viable. It's
exactly, you know, so just having an exit plan doesn't mean that you're planning to sell. It just means that you're planning to have a business you can sell.
Yeah. And then do you have some sort of checklist that people can look at?
So I do have an exit readiness questionnaire that I've put together. I think I may send you a copy of it, but it's a really great place to start, right? There's around 50 questions or so on it, which sounds like a lot, right? It sounds like, oh man, that's daunting, but it's really simple. It's just, you know, 1 through 6 there. It shouldn't take you more than probably 10 minutes to answer all the questions there because you should go with your gut answer. But what I've done is essentially all the questionnaires that are out there, I've seen most all of them from, you know, high level institutions that are doing like incredible M&A activity with $100 million companies. And I see the questionnaires that they've used. I've seen questionnaires on the other end of the spectrum. And so what I've tried to do is consolidate it down into the most meaningful things so that if you went through that process, you know, you took a few minutes and sat down, you would be able to see the things that you have either done really well that make your business, you know, fall on the upper end of the range of multiples when you get ready to sell, or what you need to work on. Right. So it's a really great tool to have and to be able to use. That's probably one of the things I'm most proud of, because I use it every time I bring on a new client.
Yeah. Yeah. We all have that questionnaire that kind of guides, like, when we're doing a web dev project, making sure that we have the hosting domains and all of that stuff. What are their technological requirements? Now we're going to like sidetrack from the script just for a second. Okay. So you have this 50 question questionnaire that takes you 10 minutes, but would probably take other people a little bit more time.
Yeah.
So hypothetically speaking, if someone were to look at like 5 questions and then want to book a call with you or schedule a consultation, what does that look like?
Yeah. So Yeah, essentially every time that I meet with someone, we'll spend at least 30 minutes and just have a strategy call, right? So just it's an opportunity for me to understand kind of where, you know, you're at in your business, you know, what your plans are, where you're trying to go, and then look for those opportunities to see, you know, is there something I can help with? And so a lot of times I'll say, like, you know, let's go through that questionnaire. I'll send it ahead of time. If you, you know, if you've already gotten it and you're going through that, then it's you kind of start to see the things that you need help with, even if you don't answer them, right? If you just went through it and looked at the questions, you're gonna know some of those places where there's issues. And yeah. So, you know, we just talk about that, help kind of put some framework around it, and really just see where the opportunities are and, you know, what's next.
If someone's thinking about exiting, how soon before the exit do they look at this questionnaire and reach out to you? Is it like ideal to give you 3 years? Have you been able to flip company yeah. around within a year?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it really depends on the size of the business. Okay. You know, what kind of range of revenue you have, because the smaller businesses typically won't need as much time because, you know, the deal isn't as large, right? It's yeah. a little easier to get financing and things for, but if you're, you know, on the upper end of the, I guess you could say, or I guess you could say if you're on the lower end of like the middle market and below that, a lot of times the due diligence period just, you know, you've got somebody that said they're interested, that due diligence period and getting from there to the close might take 2 years.
Yeah.
Just to get the deal done.
Yeah.
So and if you want to be ready for the due diligence period, you need a couple of years before that to really make sure that everything, you know, all of your finances are buttoned up, that everything's clear, that you're not, you're running too many expenses through the business, that you're paying yourself a reasonable salary, just making sure that you have a good history of at least, you know, the last 2 or 3 years before that outside buyer gets, you know, gets a hold of things and starts combing through it.
Yeah. So let's say like a company that's a real estate company that's close to $250 million in sales. How long would they need for an exit strategy? But let's look at both ends of the spectrum. So like a startup that's under $1 million and a startup that's like all the way past the hyper growth stage over $100 million, like two use cases, how long would you need with both of them?
Yeah. Generally about 5 years is okay. Kind of like the ideal time. Yeah. Now, honestly, like I wish people would start thinking about it a lot earlier because it just makes it so much easier. But if you're thinking, you know, if you've reached that point where you're like, I know I'm going to exit, and most of the time people wait until they have that feeling and, if I'm ready to get out, they wait until they start to hear that. Yeah. At that point, you start to check out. You start thinking, you know, I can let this slide. I can let that go. And it just puts you in a worse place because you're tired of it, right? You might love the business, but you get tired of doing certain things. And so you just don't have that same energy that you have, you know, 5, 6 years out knowing, okay, I have a plan. I know I want to get out of this thing. I'm going to make sure that I'm building it so that I can get out of it, you know, and hit that multiple that I need.
That's very true. My parents used to, my dad had his core business, but then he always thought it was fun to start these like businesses on the side that profited from the core business. And then he would exit them. And I asked him one time when I was like in high school, I think, how he made that so smooth, because it seemed like a bicycle shop, like make the bicycle, sell it. Like, and I was only in high school. So it was like, I didn't know that much about business, but it was like, I don't think a lot of people just make businesses like this and send them off. But he said that they would get mentors and people on the board that they wanted to acquire the business in the beginning, seeing how quickly they made it. So then they were kind of like primed, so they'd get excited about wanting to own that business later on.
That's a really great idea. I haven't thought about it from that perspective, like having your board and those people actually want to take the business from you. That's a great way to do it.
There's a founder of, I don't remember which company she was a founder of, but Yahoo acquired her company. And I had asked her what she thought of that strategy. And she said the company that Yahoo ended up acquiring them because the CEO at the time was on her board. And so when she was asking for advice about the exit strategy and who they should be acquired by, the CEO was like, no, don't go with that deal. I'm sure you could get something better. And then she came in with something better herself. So, yeah. But anyways, so, okay, we took a total from our plan for today. Let's see, where did we go? Yeah.
Well, okay. One of the things that I always say is like, you should be building the business that you would never want to sell. Right. Yeah. Like build the business that you would never want to sell because it's just so good.
Yeah.
Because when you get it to that point, other people want it. Yeah. Right. I mean, it's that they're going to start to covet kind of what you have because it's so good, whether that's a good thing or not for them to want it like that. But that definitely happens. They see that growth. They know that there's something special and, you know, it definitely attracts more people.
Yeah. Just like with in going for investors, rounds of investment with startups, or like, you don't go for the money when you need it. You go for the money when you don't need it. And people are dying to get their golden ticket to be a part that was slice of exactly pie. So let's see. You already told us it took you a year. You've been in business a year. Let's see. What were some obstacles that you were surprised to face in your earliest months working on Equip Financial Partners? And how did you overcome them?
Yeah. So the first thing that I had, well, you know, I kind of knew that it would take a little bit to get started, but I didn't know how long it was going to take from a compliance perspective just to register, because a lot of, you know, the conversation comes down to, you know, giving financial advice. And so if you give financial advice, you have to be registered as a financial advisor. And I hate that term because, you know, we all know a financial advisor and, you know, there's probably some good ones out there, but there's a lot of salespeople too that are just out to, you know, make a buck, sell a product, get a commission. And because I've always kind of been in the fee only fiduciary space where, you know, you're paying for advice and that's it. You know, it doesn't change the outcome. Because of that, you know, just looking at it from that compliance perspective, getting everything buttoned up and making sure that it works, just, yep. That was probably the biggest hurdle. It took several months just for the state to be able to say that the way that I want to do business is okay, because most of the compliance people were trained on that brokerage model, which is built on sales and investments.
Yeah.
And that's not my biggest priority. So they're like, wait a second here. What are you trying to pull? And it's like, yeah, I'm just trying to do it the honest way. Or in the way that I feel like is the best, you know, possible method to provide that advice, but they're not structured for that. So that was a hurdle. And then really just the other thing was learning how quickly you need to be able to adapt and just change the direction that you think you should go. And that actually, it's funny, I'm actually launching another business next week. So, and it's very complimentary, not getting, you know, into the weeds, but more in like that fractional CFO space.
Okay.
Because the conversations that I'm having with owners about the exit strategy, I ask, you know, where are you going? Where are you at this year? Where are you going to be next year? And looking at it from a cash flow perspective, they don't know. You know, they have a CPA, they have a bookkeeper, they have all the right people, except they are not able to look forward. So, you know, just being able to see that and recognize sometimes the thing that you are the most passionate about, the thing that there's a ton of value for, there might be something else that's in the way of having that conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I get it. So you now are adding to your pay of offers, the ability for people to schedule monthly or quarterly advice calls with you to kind of look at their strategy and structure out how their year's going to go.
A lot of the cash flow projections, just being able to build out a budget, be able to, you know, track against that budget, you know, the forecasting aspect of it, looking at, you know, labor, the productivity of the labor that they have, because I've, you know, that's really one of the biggest drains. And I've found that, you know, it all works together, right? It's all part of that exit strategy, is building that value up. And I'm just finding like this is one of the hurdles that they have is being able to look at what they have you know, and where it's headed to know if they're on track.
I tell my people when they're like, I need help with this. I'm like, look to see if there's AI to help you do the things you don't like
first, definitely. Faster,
because they're afraid of AI. And I'm like, look, it's not there to take over your job. It's there to do the parts of the job that you hate. And if you can't find any app to help you, then we'll hire another person. But it just, it increases their productivity too, because they now have like all these apps and they're able to, the things they weren't good at or struggled with, they've automated, just getting them there. Instead of being so quick to just hire like five more people for them, and each of those people could have been replaced by AI, and then we need to fire them because AI does replace them.
Yeah. The other thing too that I see a lot is that owners aren't always paying themselves enough, or they're not, you know, especially in the startup stage, it's, you know, it's perfectly normal to not pay yourself that kind of full market rate.
Yeah.
But you need to be tracking that sweat equity, whether that's as basically, you know, deferred compensation that, you know, you will be paid at some point, or, you know, if you have partners or investors, especially, you want to make sure that you can justify that salary and what you're doing. And, you know, if you're looking to be acquired and you're not paying yourself a reasonable salary, like I've met several owners in the last couple months that have been paying themselves $30,000-$40,000 a year.
Yeah.
And they should be paying themselves, you know, closer to $300,000-$400,000. So, you know, they're taking distributions out, but one of the first things a potential buyer is going to look at is, you know, how much are they going to have to pay to have someone do your job? And if the market rate is $300,000-$400,000, you're kidding yourself on your profitability.
Yeah.
You know, it makes your profitability look great, but it's not realistic.
Yeah.
So
that's very, very, very true.
Yeah. So that's the kind of stuff that I'm doing, you know, starting next week.
Yeah. Cause my husband and I, we invest a lot in real estate, and now we were looking at, like buying a franchise or a business that somebody's looking to exit. And that's a really good point about the whole, the profitability is skewed when the owner is paying themselves so little.
Yeah. And there's a lot of other add backs, you know, things that they're going to scrutinize on your, when it comes down to the EBITDA and looking at the profitability. But I mean, at the end of the day, that's typically one of the biggest red flags right off the bat. So if you're not paying yourself a reasonable salary, you really should. You know, there's compensation studies out there. They're not always the greatest. You know, if you got the Bureau of Labor Statistics, like they put together some great information that gives you a starting point. But honestly, just ask yourself, if I was going to hire someone to do my job, or if I was being acquired and that person wanted me to stay on to do my job, how much would I want to be paid?
Yeah. Because
odds are that's the fair, you know, that fair rate.
Yeah. And that's another aspect to look at is I have some friends who they invest and they say when their companies are sold, the founder sometimes has to lock in that they're going to stay on for 5 years with the salary they were paying themselves. And if they were paying themselves peanuts, they're now working for peanuts for 5 years after an acquisition. That's like, oh my gosh. Yeah. That's
so much.
Instead of celebrating your morning. So at what point, we keep going back to like the startup advice. So let's go back to your startup. At what point did you kind of look around and say, you know what, this is like my dream. This is, I've achieved my dream. Or do you kind of keep building on the dream and have like a next milestone?
Yeah, no, I don't feel like that ever settle. I'm more of the planner, right? Like, so I'm always looking forward. My wife hates it because as soon as we like feel like we're there, like we made it, I'm already thinking about the next thing. Like I've moved on. And part of that is probably me learning that, you know, I do have ADD and never knew that. I've dealt with it my entire life. And so it's easier for me sometimes to make a list of things I'm not going to do than it is to think about what I will do.
Okay.
So, you know, that's kind of one of the things. I don't feel like I've ever really gotten there, right? As soon as I start getting close, I'm just pushing the boundaries a little further out. But as far as like feeling that sense of success, I mean, I started feeling that on day one because the biggest hurdle in the way was myself, you know, leaving what I thought I needed and being able to just embrace you know, that entrepreneurial journey. Yeah, that was when I realized, like, hey, this is the thing I've been wanting to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. So there's, you have ADD, I have ADHD. I love reading about neurobiology. I was wondering why this conversation was so smooth, and it's because we're both going along the same rabbit trail, pinging back and forth.
But yeah.
Our brains work the same way, so it makes sense now. But there's this this one book on neurobiology, and it's called The Molecule of More. And basically, and there's another book, it's called The Happiness Effect. And Basically the two books, what they say is like a gross summary of like hundreds of pages of text, is that your brain is happiest when you think of something you really want to achieve, and then you feel like you're progressing toward that goal. But reaching the goal doesn't actually like release the dopamine. It's thinking about that goal and then seeing like little elements of progress along the way. So I love to include that question because it tells you a lot about the person's neurobiology. Like, are they leveraging dopamine to like reach their goals, or are they kind of like, how is their brain working to help them along?
Yeah. And we've all heard the saying, it's not about the destination, it's about the journey. I mean, that's at the end of the day, that's what I enjoy.
Yeah.
The ups and downs. I mean, it creates a story.
Oh yeah. Especially the downs. You're like, I can't believe I survived that.
Right. You look back and then you're like, now you're stronger, right?
You've
had the experience and it's like, now you're not afraid of it.
Yeah. Yeah. One of my companies faced a few attempted hostile takeovers. And before that, I was like, how do CEOs become so like, so informed with the legal structure of the country they're in? After the third one, forget. My friends who know I'm in marketing, who have a legal problem, are calling me to ask which strategies I would be using if I was in their shoes, and which lawyer I recommend. Yeah, you don't realize how much you're going to learn about anything until you're in the thick of it. But okay, so let's see. Your business has a very unique value proposition. And you already mentioned that you looked at the playing field, at the landscape, and you said, okay, there's 70% that are falling through the cracks. I have a win-win solution. How do you present that to people like in a concise way so they understand, look, this is a win-win solution. I'm not trying to like sell you on something. I'm creating something that's going to be a massive value for you.
Yeah. You know, it's easy to say that, you know, you show people the numbers and they're like, ah, yes, I need to do that. That never works. You never try to just show someone numbers and show them logic. They won't do anything. So essentially for me, you know, on the aspect of, you know, how do you charge, that always comes up. And when I can say like, I'm truly aligned with you, right? I don't get paid from anyone else except for the client. So, you know, that part kind of takes down some of that pressure that they feel like, that, oh no, I've got to do something. And then it's just really helping them envision where they want to be. And so once they, like you were saying a minute ago, when you have that goal and you have kind of the destination in mind, and then you realize where you're at, part of that's going through that questionnaire. When you realize where you're at, then it's like, okay, there's some work to do if I really want to be there. And sometimes they realize like, I don't really want to be there. Like that's not, I thought I wanted that, but now looking at it, maybe I don't, maybe I want something different. Right. And so from looking at it to see, you know, are we on the same page, and how do you get there? I just want people to be successful. I mean, at the end of the day, that's what I want to see. And you know, if I can help you do that along the way, that's awesome. Like, I want to be there for the journey. Like, I don't really care if you sell your business or not. You know, that's not my motivation. And my fees would reflect that, because I'm not, there's no, you know, if you sell your business, I don't get anything out of it. So, you know, it kind of lowers that window, that, or not window, but that trust barrier. So to be able to understand like, yeah, you're not trying to sell my business so you can capture my assets. That's always like one of the questions, but
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if that answered the question completely or not, but
No, so you basically, you said, look, okay, money makes people semi-happy. Making people successful and making money while making people successful makes you ultimately happy. That makes everyone happy. There's very few people who are lucky enough to be able to structure a business where they make money by making people successful. You figured it out.
Trying to.
Yeah.
Right. It's like you still find those hurdles. It's like, the exit strategy, it's not really about exiting. It's like I said, it's about building transferable value. But when they always think of it as selling, and that's really not what it's about. But it's unfortunate because that's what the industry always talks about. So that's what people think. Just trying to educate a little bit more so that you realize, like, hey, it's just good business strategy, that once they kind of start to see it that way, it changes the conversation.
Okay. So you have to help them have like this emotional shift.
Yeah. It's like going to the dentist. You know, people don't want to hear what they need to change. Like, you've got a toothache, you're like, oh my gosh, they're going to have to do a root canal. They're going to have to pull my tooth. It's like, you finally go in and you realize it was just one little thing was stuck in between your teeth. And it's like, oh, that was simple.
Yeah.
But you're terrified of it. So it's kind of like exit planning is the same way. I don't want to talk about it because if I start talking about it, it might happen.
Yeah.
Same thing I hear with, I only know the only people that I know that die are the ones that have a will. It's like, that makes no sense at all. It doesn't, you're not going to die just because you have a will. You will leave your family in a lot better place.
Yeah.
If you have that, but it's not going to cause it. So.
Yeah. My husband and I update ours on the fives and the zeros. So if the year ends at a five or a zero, we update the will. And that way it's not like tied to us having a fear of something. It's just tied to like a random number on the calendar.
Yeah. Yeah. Take some of the emotional aspect out of it. That's a challenge. It's the same way with your business too. If you can step back and look at it as a true, like as a business instead of, personally, makes it a lot easier.
Yeah. So is there a movie or book or mentor who kind of gave you your like aha moment, or how did you kind of get here?
Yeah. So I love to read, but I hate reading fiction and that kind of stuff. Like the fun stuff. Like for me, the fun stuff is business books. I love Michael Gerber's The E-Myth. Like that's a really great book.
That is.
I really enjoyed what's it called? I'm drawing a blank. Oh, the Common Path to Uncommon Success. I don't know if you know John Lee Dumas, The Entrepreneurs on Fire. It's got that podcast. He wrote that book and it was just really interesting because all he does is interview entrepreneurs every day. He kind of like compiled all the information that he's learned from so many people over, 13, 14 years into a book. And it's like, that was really helpful to see that a lot of the way that businesses really become successful is not because they're doing something that's new or different or just wild and crazy. It's just because the common things of being consistent, showing up, that stuff. And then there's the one thing. Yeah, so just kind of like, I forget the guy's name that wrote that, but the one thing, that was a very good one. So, but there's a ton of others. I mean, I could literally go on and on about all the business books that I really love, but I won't.
We can include links to some of them in the show notes so that you guys can hop over there and see what they are.
Yeah, perfect.
Let's see, what were a few surprising lessons that you learned when you first launched Equip Financial Partners?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that I had to figure out right off the bat with, as far as a surprise goes, is realizing that sometimes the credibility and everything that you've built at one company doesn't necessarily follow you.
Yeah.
Right? I didn't expect people to leave the business I was at and come with me. A lot of them wouldn't have fit what I'm doing anyways. Yeah. But I'd also built, a lot of connections through LinkedIn and was having conversations with owners about like exit strategy. And we were having people call the office and asking me about that. Mm-hmm. wanted to talk to me. And I was like, okay, well, you know, I'm at a point right now. I can confidently say, if I leave, I can continue to do this. And then I did. And that was not the case. It was crickets for, you know, a couple months really before any kind of, you know, connection or call came in. So that was like one of the biggest shocks. It's like people were finding me and reaching out to me, but then I changed where I was at to better align with what I was talking about and wanting to do.
Yeah.
And it was like, hold on, wait a second. And so, yeah, that was kind of a surprise for me.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, I one of the first things I do with founders whenever I work with them is we build up their personal brand so that entrepreneurs tend to love like big challenges. And so they're going to change from company to company over the years. But once we've built out their personal brand, they have that platform to follow them from company to company. But it also makes their company so much more resilient to competitors. Because if the founder is the core value of the business, then when somebody else tries to launch something similar, well, I don't work there. So how can you copy my value?
Right. But that also, it can become a challenge from an exit perspective.
Yeah.
Because if your business is you, that makes it kind of tough. And we've seen that, I think, you know, through different YouTube personalities and things like that, they, you know, people find their channel and they want to, you know, buy that audience from them. And then they do, and they fail because that person's not there. So, if you can sell it, if there's people willing to buy it and buy from you, you just have to realize it may not continue like it did when you were there.
Yeah.
And I know for a lot of owners, that legacy, you know, what they leave behind is super important, and it's a challenge. You know, you start to feel that regret if you're not careful.
Yeah. You have two sides of the coin.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So what are some tools and tactics that you use to manage your time and team effectively?
Yeah, I think just the first thing, just as far as tactics, just having that open line of communication, really just being able to talk about things, find out where the breakdowns are without having that fear of being fired. I know too many people that have, I've seen it in the past too. It's like, you're afraid to say anything because as soon as you say something, you're like, all right, now I'm on the short list. So, you know, I had some pushback, but so just that open communication. I think that's where so many problems could easily be fixed if people were just a little bit more willing to talk about it and realize, you know, as an owner, you don't know everything.
Yeah.
You know, the things that you do really well, but you don't know what everyone else does every day. So just being able to trust those. So that's kind of from a tactics perspective. As far as the tools, one of the best tools I found just for me in managing time and like my focus, it has been Wavebox. So I don't know if you're familiar with Wavebox, but it's essentially a browser that's built on top of Chromium. All of your Chrome extensions and everything will work in that browser, but it allows you to just segregate things differently so that you can kind of bucket groups of tabs, and it sleeps tabs when you're not using them, so it's not draining on the resources. You can actually have multiple cookie containers inside the same browser. So, you know, I know it's been a challenge for me in the past to have two different Google accounts open in the same browser. You had to either open an incognito and move it over to another monitor or something just to be able to do that. Now they're both open. You know, I've got a cookie container for the business and a cookie container for like personal stuff. So that's been a great tool. Just found that about 6 months ago. Okay. And it's been a game changer from a person that deals with, focus.
Yeah. Let's check it out. I just typed it into the browser so I can look at it after.
Yeah. Yeah.
It
is a paid browser. So just FYI,
I'd
be prepared, but.
Well, something that epic, I'm sure. You wouldn't expect it to be free. What is the best way for entrepreneurs to get in touch with you? Is it Quora, LinkedIn, Facebook page, email, website?
Yeah, generally, My website's great. Always happy because there's plenty of information there. So if you just want to learn more about me, but I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. I do try to post a video as well every week to LinkedIn and to YouTube. So I've got a YouTube channel as well. If you just search for my name, you'll find it pretty easy to find. But those are both great places just to reach out. I'm also happy for anybody to email or call. Unfortunately, I do answer the phone most of the time. So for me, because that means there's a lot of telemarketers and things like that. But, you know, we all deal with that. And whether it's a good usage of time or not, I don't know. But I do know that I have a lot of great conversations. And at the end of the day, relationships matter. So,
yeah, people do work with people. So LinkedIn, exactly. YouTube, and your website. What's your website URL again?
Yeah, it's equipfp.com. So EQUIPFP.com.
Okay. And then last thing, we're wrapping it up.
Yeah.
If you have something to offer the audience, like maybe part of your questionnaire, this is where you would mention it.
Yeah. So like I said, that questionnaire is probably one of the things that I am most proud of. Like I said, it is somewhat long sometimes, but if you're willing to just take a few minutes to do that, I think it'll be immensely helpful for someone that runs a business to be able to see it and look at it objectively and know what you need to do if you ever plan to sell. And, you know, the other thing is if you plan to die at your desk, you know, or die on the battlefield, it's a messy one, right? Like it's a messy exit. It's still an exit. So if you're going to do that, you need to be preparing differently. Having that conversation and that realization with yourself kind of early on is probably pretty important. So that questionnaire will help you kind of see where you want to go.
And then on the questionnaire, you include the link where people can book a call with you.
Yes, it's on the questionnaire as well. So you shouldn't have any trouble.
All right. So you all know how to get in touch with him. You can go to the show notes, go to his interview page, download that, and check out the questionnaire. Catch up with him. LinkedIn, YouTube, you have his website. Chris, thank you so much for taking time to speak with us today, share your insights and your story. For those of you who are not sure if you're going to do an exit or not for your startup, now you have so much information to get you started on that path. Remember, you have a 5-year countdown. So if you're thinking of changing it all within the next 5 years, you should be checking out that questionnaire today. I look forward to seeing you all on the show next time. Chris, do you have anything?
I just really appreciate the time today and really wish that everyone would start sooner.
Yes, of course. Take care, guys.
Thanks.